It had taken her through strange experiences, yet it was quite clear that she had brought a divine ray into the world with her, lowly and far from clever as she was. She had lived what so many of us had talked about. The values are awry on Earth. Intellect and a trained brain, mind are great adjuncts, but they often become barriers to truth and a true expression of divine love. Man's reasoning mind must learn to be obedient to and co-operative with the inner self, the Christ in every man of the teaching of the Master Jesus, and the light within of Eastern sages. To me, this has been demonstrated very clearly by the passing through our station of this great soul, so simple yet profound in her understanding of that, one, meant with truth. Mother Florence has told me about her departure. She and our missionary were talking together on the terrace here when Mother Florence observed that her patient appeared to have gone into a deep contemplation. They remained still and silent. Mother felt a great presence as of an angel of light with them. She held her soul in quiet expectation. Then the light grew stronger about them, the air more potent, and there was a feeling of music. Her missionary friend, she says, impulsively stirred, put out her hand and touched Mother Florence. "Thank you and bless you all for your kind reception of me," she whispered. "How splendid your work is here. And I realize that it is entirely voluntary. But your true place is waiting for you all when you have completed your service. May I often come and visit with you?" Mother Florence felt that she had no words with which to reply except "God bless you." The light grew and multiplied about them, and Mother said that her eyes were only able to perceive the light and nothing more. She felt herself swept upwards into enlightenment. When her spirit returned, those are her words, "Our missionary had left. She had gone to her rightful place. Love had been translated to higher spheres, you see, long before intellect, as in the scientist, or skill, as with Dr. X, had been ready to ascend. What a lesson for us here and for those on Earth. Please record it. 13th January, later our Nazi patient is still the same, inert, motionless, shut up in the shell of himself. A shell indeed. Father Joseph tells me that the poor creature might be like this for what we would say on Earth, many years. He has already been held in the dark bondage of the hell of his own making since the end of the last war, and that is over 20 years ago. I am fast losing count of time as we knew it. On Earth, things happen here. Souls or entities at all the lower stages of progress come and go. We either leave or we stay, but we do not reckon these events in time. We live, or we exist, according to the level of our thought, life. Some are content to stay, thinking no doubt that this is the final stage. There must, of course, come a time in the soul's awakening when that belief is proved false, but Father Joseph tells me that some souls settle down in one stage for years, even centuries, while others persist in their former earth surroundings for ages. Our Nazi then may lie like this long after many of the patients, helpers and servers here have graduated to higher spheres. Still we have regular thought sessions for him. Even the Jewish woman has been to see him. She stood looking at this pathetically disfigured soul and at last she whispered, "He doesn't look so evil, does he?" The wonderful lesson about this is that by the time he is ready to confront her, she will have progressed enough to be able to forgive all the injuries for which he was responsible, and she will be prepared to help him. And he will need help. I talked to our wise director about this. Father Joseph said that although we are doing all we can, it is a pity that there are no prayers which could be said for the man's soul from the inhabitants of the earth plane. Interested in this point of view, I asked for explanations. Prayers and good thoughts, he told me, for those who have left the earth life, by their fellows still in incarnation, are a great aid to our work here. The prayer forms, and the potency of good thoughts, cause a quickened vibration to reach the one prayed for. As he is generally closely connected with his former life by interests and affections and memories, he is able to respond to such vibrations, thus he is much helped. Such petitions and meditations could be likened to a draught of healing water for the newly transmitted soul. Our advisor shook his head with what I felt was infinite sadness. But alas, There is no one on earth to pray ever for the repose of this poor soul. I thought deeply about this. Poor soul he is. But not a lost soul. There must have been some good which the great ones recognized, otherwise a Nazi patient would not have been rescued. His besetting sin, which blacked out all else, was love of power. It swelled into viciousness against another race, even causing him to put to death men, women and children of that race. But unless we are all wise, how can we judge what he did? I have always believed in reincarnation, and have as yet had no cause to believe otherwise. I wonder then, with what provocations and with what bitter soul memories this poor creature hastened back to rebirth. There have been monsters throughout history who have burned, tortured, pillaged and ravaged. What has happened to them? They could not all have been lost. Poor creatures. They must have crawled up out of the slime of their misdeeds into some soul, light at some time, and perhaps then, have hastened back to birth with only half digested knowledge. Always, I feel certain, those ahead must have reached down a helping hand, or sent a loving thought, for no soul is left alone. But as each soul must come to the judgment of his earth deeds and results of them, one can only ask for strength to be vouchsafed to this poor, deluded entity when he too stands at the bar of judgment. Will no one on earth pray for his soul at the time? We have been instructed to pray for those who despitefully use us. Here, surely, is a living example for us all. Perhaps this is a notorious case. But what of the millions more who, during their short span on earth, have done evil and have paid for their crimes, as we have so smugly said, by execution, and then have been forgotten? Have no prayers been molded by love into thoughts of compassion which could reach them in their darkness? Have we ever remembered them and called for aid for the reckoning of their misdeeds? It is a sobering thought. In such a connection we might discover that our negligence and the self-interest in which we have enclosed ourselves might call for recompense when we reach this world. You ask about rescue circles? When I was in the body I knew about this method of help and even attended such groups myself, when I was investigating. But the investigators and helpers must be very pure in heart and very sure of divine help and strength when attempting such work. Now that I have witnessed, for myself, the state of such a soul from outer darkness, I am aware more potently of the dangers of such groups, and would advise caution. Yet the sending out of light from the center by groups at meditation times, the deliberate formation of a prayer thought to reach down and touch those poor benighted ones, a moment of remembrance in a holy place, even the uttering of the names of such unfortunates, commending them to divine mercy, all are helps towards the resurrection of those who dwell in darkness. Forgive me if I have preached, such is not my wish. I can only trust that the describing of my grave experiences here may bring some echo of compassion into the hearts of those who read. 15th January I have met my family, and visited my father, mother, sister and brother. But as this is a private affair and not relevant to the purpose of these communications, I shall not write about it. Our Nazi patient still sleeps. His Jewish victim has been visited by her husband, a kind and gentle soul, and they have talked long and earnestly. The child, who was taken from her, is not, it appears, in this world. Her husband told of his long search. At last he was told that the child had lived on and had grown up. Poor soul she exists, bitter and unhappy and sunk into a sordid life. On learning this information, the mother at first reverted to her bitterness and longing for revenge, but, as Father Joseph and her husband pointed out to her, revenge has no meaning now. There is no avenging of injury either here, or I imagine, in the realms above, there is only understanding, forgiveness and selfless love. After much discussion, and I was called in to speak at some of the sessions, our poor sad mother became calmed and was enabled to see purpose in all things. Now she is as anxious as her husband to locate the girl and get into touch with her by thought, love and concentrated prayer. She herself needs a great deal more cleansing of her etheric before she can succeed in her quest. But she is already a different soul. The old hard shell is melting from her. Gentleness and maternal love shine in her. She is happy to be once more with the husband she lost, and is preparing to join him in the home he is preparing for her. At first she may sojourn with him for a space, returning here to rest and grow strong in her soul. Later, when the healing is accomplished, the way will be open for these two souls to be together, and to contact their daughter. I mean that the powers, that, be who operate these contacts from this side will find a channel through which the girl may be reached. Light and love will be poured upon her. Our Dr. X has made many visits to his medical fraternity. He returns to us filled with new hope, new eagerness to proceed with his progress and his future work. From his last visit he came to me, shining with happiness. "It's wonderful, sister," he burst out, "I've learned so much. Why, oh why, couldn't I have known of this when I lived on Earth? What a marvelous purpose and plan there is to life. And how small, almost insignificant, the struggles, fallacies and failures of the last Earth life appear now." I urged him to go on and to tell me more of his discoveries. He is thrilled, he admits, with the prospect of future work and research. He sees how this devoted band of medical men under their teacher and leader are fast finding ways of relieving humanity of some of its suffering. We are still only on the palliative side. As Curie puts it, he said, for man must be allowed to go on and use his discoveries for destruction and for evoking fear and submission in his fellows until he learns better. But meanwhile the band is helping to put through ideas on the origin and treatment of disease. "Cancer?" I asked, remembering, now with only a slight shudder of distaste, the ravaging of my own Earth body. "Yes. Cancer." He nodded. "We were discussing how this disease is caused in the first instance, by one cell going berserk, becoming a rogue cell and breaking out from the ordered pattern and rhythm of the bodily functions. One cell can disrupt the whole rhythm of any particular group of cells. For example, if you put particles of sand on a glass plate and arrange them in a certain pattern and order, then give one grain of sand a push and send it careering amongst the others. The whole pattern is disturbed. It breaks up. And when that particular grain comes to rest, the pattern is different. So you have to discover what makes that one cell go berserk?" I probed. "I believe we know that," he answered. "That can be from two causes, an outer one, such as an actual force striking the cellular pattern, as with our example of the grain of sand, and this can result from a fall or a blow on the body. And an inner cause, pressure and tension built up in the mind and so reproduced in the body cells, which obey the mind up to a point, thus causing an obstruction. This muscle tension, or nerve tension, can result in the collapse of some cells and the pushing out of place of others. Such tensions have many causes: worry, hate, fear, color most of the lives on Earth, frustration, anger, jealousy, inhibition and intense bottling up of emotions, maybe from the highest motives but contrary to the freedom of the personality. All these are forces which concentrate themselves into extra tension on one organ and finally, on one cell. The rogue which breaks away and starts a reproductive system of its own, really a production of a fungus. You know, sister, if scientists and medical researchers studied the cause and production of fungi on plants, trees, roots, they would gain much insight into the rogue cell." He was talking to me in language that I could comprehend. This excitement of his was infectious. I probed on. He told me much that I could not quite understand. But back we came to the great truth I am imbibing more and more, though, as we know, its meaning was apparent in all our teachings on Earth, if only we could follow them. Light. Light. And yet more light. Light to educate and uplift the minds of the people, bringing calmness and peace in a sure reliance on life's purpose and the wonder of divine creation. Light in their souls and in their minds to lift them above the illusion of Earth life's fears. Light in their minds to teach them how to tune in any frustration of the life or personality to the great reality of divine love. Naturally, this is the fact in Dr. X's revelations which appeals to me. "What man needs to discover," Dr. X went on, "is some agent which would, using the example of the sand grain running amok, lure or force that single grain back into its correct place, or nullify it altogether and so restore the form and pattern. In the case of the first rogue cell at the outset of a cancerous growth, medical science would do well to concentrate research to discover a powerful agent which would act as a restorer of this original life pattern. Drugs, he says, should be tried and they will have partially favorable results. But it will be to the supreme benefits of light to which men must look for new techniques, new treatments, new restoratives, the light, he indicated, of the newly discovered, but only partially understood and employed laser ray. Dr. X spoke of the use of a pure light ray, and I understood him to be referring to the laser. In the future, he asserts, such a ray will be used more extensively and can project its light onto these rogue cells. Later, he says, the band will help to impress the minds of researchers with the realization that, apart from its cutting power, this ray, or rather a variation of it in modified form, can be used as a sort of catalyst to reform the cellular pattern which has gone awry. Before this present century is out, Dr. X tells me, this method of employing light will have become a great medical art and treatment to alleviate and arrest suffering. At the same time, man will be learning to govern himself, his mind, his emotions and his reactions to the purpose of creative thought. Dr. X ended, we are still on the palliative branch, but at least in the foreseeable future, medical men will be enabled to control the onslaught of cancer, as they have done such former scourges as diphtheria, typhoid and plague. Diagnosis of the early stages of cancer will be made by an adaptation of the present X-ray method and the rogue cells will be isolated. Then these will be treated by light to nullify their mischievous distraction of the pattern form. As inoculation and vaccination have worked to stamp out former scourges of mankind, so the developed use of the ray will finally reduce cancer as a killing disease to a minimum. Research is being pursued actively and the seed, thoughts of these revolutionary ideas are now being projected into the minds of scientists and researchers in all nations. And which nation will get the break, through first, he smiled, is an interesting speculation for us. The Daily Telegraph, 31st of October 1968. Cancer cells detected by laser light, a promising new way of detecting cancer cells, using laser light to illuminate them under a microscope, is being investigated at the International Research and Development Company's laboratories in Newcastle, upon Tyne. There is evidence that the malignant cells take on the brilliant red glow, while normal cells do not. This was first observed when scientists started looking at malignant cells from the gut. The technique was then tried on cervical smears from women, but with limited success. The Daily Telegraph, 13th of October 1966. Neutron used as cancer treatment. Scientists in Britain have started work on a new radiation device, using neutrons, which may be more effective than X-rays in the treatment of many forms of cancer. Mr. James Wood, in charge of the project at the Ministry of Defence Services Electronics Research Laboratory, Baldock, Hertfordshire, said yesterday, we cannot say definitely yet whether it will be a cure, but it looks like a 50-50 bet. It will take about 3 years to develop a neutron generating tube with the high power output that is required. The end product is expected to be a machine compact enough to be installed in an ordinary radiotherapy treatment room. The neutron generation will be encased in 14 inches of steel with a small aperture for the neutron beam. Mr. Wood said that high power output was needed so that treatment time could be cut down to a few minutes. This was the maximum time tolerable to a conscious patient. 6 weeks ago, a tube of high power was installed for the first clinical trials, but it still falls short of the required power output for routine patient treatment. It is being used for studies of cell damage and depth dose characteristics. Visitors to the laboratory's open days on Friday and next Monday and Tuesday will be able to see the neutron tube. The open days celebrate the laboratory's 21st anniversary. Our medical consultant writes, the whole thing is entirely experimental. No one has cured a cancer with neutrons, even the cyclotron has not yet cured a cancer. Nothing has been proved, 17th January. You must by now be realizing the tremendous importance and reality associated with light. If you recall, we worked on Earth, as well as we could in the heavy Earth associations, trying to attain light. But how difficult there to penetrate the inert forces which seemed to hold us. I wrote in my book Frontiers of Revelation of the experience I had of etheric light, such experiences must be sought more positively, and with greater use of the intuitive powers, by those in the world who would wish to lift the slow vibration of the planet. More of this, perhaps, later, but to teach and learn by experience is the main reason for our communications to you. More and more positively I am stretching out into the light. By thought and by will, the realization of light surrounding me, interpenetrating through every stratum of my being, has become my study, my concentration and my meditation at this stage. When I am not on duty with the souls in the home who need care and help, and even then I make use of the light, I will myself into light, asking that light may be afforded me, that my soul and spirit may become as one infused light, that I may live and move in the light which is the creative will. This is a wonderful, thrilling experience. When I caught but a glimpse of light on Earth, and it uplifted and changed me, and changed also the direction of my life, that impermanent glimpse was as nothing to the immersion of light that is possible here. I appear to lie in my garden, yet in the power of this light, my mind and spirit stretch out into a glorious extension. I become conscious, if only partially, of the world beyond world of thought, even beyond thought into being. Psychiatrists would call these subjective experiences. Yet what do any of us really know of the subjective extensions of the mind? Here we are mind, stepped down to our individual potency, I grant, but still mind, untrammeled by the destructive and apparent reality of matter. Therefore, by thought and will, we can travel far out beyond what constitutes our immediate circumstances, if we wish. As I think I have stressed before, this stretching out into light and life can appear as a dream, extension. Yet, conversely, it is true and real to the dreamer. Perhaps it is reality itself. At my present stage I cannot know. Maybe I can illustrate by an experience, and the explanation of what happened, or appeared to happen, if you wish, to me. I use the word appeared guardedly, because I am still trying to synchronize an inner spiritual experience with the extension of the subjective mind of the psychiatrists, and the unconscious mind of the occultists, in earth terms. But what I have learned and gained by my experience is invaluable, thrilling and fills me with renewed hope and joy. My experience happened during the last season of willing and praying myself into the light. I was transported, how I do not know, to another place, another sphere, another mansion in this world. Maybe another planet, but of this I have no conclusive knowledge. Suffice it to say that suddenly and immediately I was conscious of being in a great atmosphere of learning. I realized that I was in a university, yet it was much more than that, for there were halls of learning, and a pervading atmosphere of thought which thrilled my soul and satisfied a deep yearning in me. The buildings appeared Grecian in character, clean of line and symmetry. It was as though one imagined, or remembered perhaps in some deeply buried soul, memory, how such buildings should look. There were outer courts and beautiful vistas of gardens, where fountains of light played. Here there were many souls, groups of students, sometimes surrounding one who appeared to be a teacher, intent upon his discourse, or composed in deep meditation with him, sometimes in clusters eagerly discussing together, and sometimes a student alone and apart in contemplation. These here were of all types and from all nations. I knew that this man in his last incarnation on the earth plane had been dark, skinned. Here was a Chinese, an Indian, a redskin. They were not different now, yet inwardly one was cognizant of the race to which they had latterly belonged. All had an air of concentrated clarity of thought and purpose, which clothed them like auras, brilliant and shimmering, yet varying in color and in degree of intensity. I was thrilled. I gazed around me and saw the inner halls or maybe temples. I noted that the doors of these stood wide open, yet none of the students in the outer courts seemed to proceed within. I wandered freely about amongst the groups, and through the avenues and groves. Here, I told myself, is my university of the spirit, and the memory of my longing for the materialization of just such a university on earth filled me now with the new joy in this heavenly accomplishment. I attached myself first to one group and then another. As I wandered, I thought I recognized faces that I had known, or figures familiar through their fame or their accomplishments on earth. Yet I could not be sure. I thought I saw your husband in one group in this court, intent, with others, on the discourse of a teacher, too immersed in the subject. He only acknowledged me by a quick turn of the head, as though surprised to see me. I went on. I must find my place, I kept reiterating, in this great city of learning. I felt I was in some ecstatic dream, so uplifted and transported in my mind was I. This is heaven indeed. Always this has been my objective, like some half-forgotten vision of reality. Now I know, I exulted, that such universities of discourse and study exist. It is so. And I too shall attend, when I discover the teacher whose curriculum contains the knowledge I seek. The thought came to me suddenly. What of the inner courts? And I found myself with this speed of thought to which I am only slowly becoming acclimatized, ascending the steps towards one of the great doors which stood open. Here I felt, was revelation indeed. But when I reached the top step a light blinded me. The shock stopped any progress. I stood still, blank in mind and dazed, unable to push my way into this blinding flash. I was aware that the brilliancy of this light was too much for my state. Immediately, something seemed to be extinguished within me. My own light had become dimmed. I had the inexplicable experience of shrinking. Again I felt the strange, half-frightening sensation of dwindling. And dwindling. And I was back in my garden. This expansion of consciousness had been checked. I felt deflated. And defeated. By what, I asked myself? By my own egotism, my own inadequacy. I, who had not yet qualified for attendance in the outer courts, had dared to try to penetrate within. To say that my spirit was shaken is an understatement. It has taken me periods of deep self-examination and earnest seeking for sufficient light to see this experience in the clarity of unemotional understanding. I was always too precipitate, always a seeker too eager to go on, and go forward, to break by force the frontiers of revelation. On earth, you remember? I had envisaged a university of the spirit, I had longed to be part of such a movement. I had worked with this glimpse of the vision in my mind. The vision may have been right, but the approach to it savored of egoism, the egoism of the limited human mind which has to be cleansed and stripped before the higher pattern of the spirit can manifest. I see now that the thought pattern on earth is not geared sufficiently high above the material and the personal to hold such a possibility. I have had to learn too, that I am far from ready to participate as I had hoped. I am not yet entitled, it seems, to be enrolled in the outer courts of these halls of learning. Perhaps, by the time of another incarnation? Who knows? One can only realize one's errors and go forward into greater understanding. But now I am content. The vision is still with me, complete and satisfying, the hope of further teaching and progress. I must make myself ready by continued service, as well as by facing myself and learning of my defects, ready for that transition to a sphere for which my whole soul yearns. Meanwhile, there is much to do, much to learn, so many new facets of this life with which to experiment, and finally to which to adjust, and always the light is here. That light of the spirit which must be enhanced in me so that I can abide in it, and it in me. When this has, at last, been accomplished, even to some small measure, I know that I shall be allowed to proceed onwards towards my soul's desire, that is, to become a pupil in the outer courts, to mingle with those of great and exalted minds, to listen to truths propounded by masters and teachers of wisdom, to imbibe such wisdom and to have my soul open to the eternal realities. Nothing stops one from doing what one wishes here. except one's own inadequacies. 17th January, later this is a world of thought indeed. So is the earth plane, you will say, from which I have just graduated. Only there, thought is slower in action because all vibration, and hence all results or effects, are slower, and one has a facade, a persona with which to mask thought. Here one seems to be naked.